Soul Sister Radio. Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace. Destiny, coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Safety First is Murphy's Law. And today, we have a really special guest. And before we introduce our guest, I'd like to say welcome to Soul Sister Radio. This is Tracy Murphy, and my co-host, Star Myers. Star, are you here with us?
Yes, I am. Very glad to be here. Excited about our guest tonight.
I know. Me too. And I've been learning. You've known her a lot longer than I have. But I'm learning about the work that she's doing, and it's something that needs to be out there, you know, let people know that there's hope, and they don't have to battle survival from these types of traumas by themselves. Would you like to introduce our guest tonight?
Yes, tonight we have sexual abuse recovery coach Rachel Grant. Rachel, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Rachel.
Hello,
everybody.
Hi.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is really great. Our show, Safety First is Murphy's Law, is a new show. We just started maybe 2 months ago. And we created this show in honor of Susan Murphy Milano. And she created a tool called the Evidentiary Abuse Affidavit from her book called Time's Up. Mm-hmm. And this book saved my life. And all the work that she does out there for everybody else, I can honestly say I'm a true testament. I lived it. I experienced it. I got out of it. And I've been in recovery from it since. But thanks to the education and knowledge that I've learned from Susan, I want to be able to give it to other people and share it with other people. And so that's where Star and I have come together and created this show. And we like to bring on experts and specialists that can provide education for people and help them through their process.
Absolutely. That's amazing.
Yeah. So tell me about you. Tell us about what you do. You're the founder of a coaching business for sexual abuse recovery.
That's right. Not the norm out there. It's not. There aren't many of us out there working around sexual abuse in this way. So I started Rachel Grant Coaching and developed my program From Broken to Beyond Surviving starting about in 2007. And
wow.
I wonder where I should begin. where should I start the story?
You started about 7 years ago, and would you like to talk about where the passion came from, or would you like to talk about what you do now? It's up to you.
Sure. Well, yeah, I'll just share a little bit about my story so folks kind of know how this all came to be, you know, what I'm kind of up to in life these days. So I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma and was the youngest of three kids and was living with my mother and my father and my grandfather. And I had just, a fairly normal childhood. We were kind of in the middle between country and suburbish and kind of environment, but there was a huge park across the way, and it was one of those towns where I really could just walk out and go play and run around and not really worry about much happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of space, lots of freedom to roam about. And my grandfather was quite a bit older, and we didn't spend too much time together, but I remember him being kind of this warm, friendly guy who was in the house, and I spent a lot of time kind of almost like a caretaker. You know, I'd take mm-hmm. him his cereal, and I would help my mom out sometimes if she was busy and needed something, and we would just sit together sometimes and watch TV and tell stories, and oftentimes we'd go out and sit on the porch together and spend time that way. And he was just kind of this warm, quiet companion until the day that he started abusing me when I was 10 years old.
Interesting. So when he started abusing you, was it just a sudden I mean,
Zadie, let me stop you for a minute. Okay, there, somebody has their speaker on. Do you see the echo?
Just turn the volume down. Whoever has a volume on their computer that's on the line as well, just turn the volume on the computer off because it'll be the same.
Okay. What I'm going to do is
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship.
Okay, go ahead. Try it again.
Hello?
Are we on here?
Yeah, go ahead. Try it again.
Before we get started, can I take this opportunity to thank our sponsors? I'd like to thank our show sponsors, which would be BrainBiz, Imagine Publicity, and Voices Amplified. And I'd like to thank our station sponsors, which would be ImageMakeoverProgram.com, 4 International, Heart4.com, Spa Gyms, BMB Builders, and Remodeling, and a special thank you to our music sponsors. Take over, Tracy.
Okay, thank you
back
very
to you
much,
guys.
Star.
Now, is everybody still here? Is Rachel still here?
I am here. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's no more echo?
No, I think we're all good now, ladies. Go ahead and take it away.
Now, Rachel, you were telling us about your childhood and why you came to start working.
Right,
with a man who had just abused you, and you were, I was going to ask you the question of when this happened, had you been already feeling any feelings like he was going to push any limits with you, or did it just kind of come out of the blue?
Yeah, it was certainly out of the blue, and so often that's the way abuse is.
And so that must have been really frightening.
It was very, you know, the first time that it happened, I was fairly frozen in the moment, and when I finally kind of got up and got away, I just remember going back into my parents' room and was there crying and scared and very upset and didn't know what to do next, know how to respond. And, you know, this is something that, you know, this particular experience of, you know, when abuse starts and we're young and we don't know how to handle it, we don't know what language to even use sometimes to describe what's happening to us, is a moment when we often begin feeling very alone in the world. And for me, that certainly became a sense and a way of being that stuck with me for a very long time. And eventually, when my parents did discover what was happening, they were great in the sense that they got my grandfather out of the house. They were very supportive of me, but they were also a little unsure of what to do next, you know, how to really help me through understanding what had happened, healing from what had happened. And so it kind of became this experience that, yes, it was there and we all knew about it, but we didn't really spend much time talking about it. So a lot of my teens were spent making lots of bad choices and chasing around, feeling very insecure, doubting my worth and my value, and struggling to really feel like I was accepted and okay. And by the time I got to my 20s and was, you know, starting to have a more serious relationship, you know, other problems started to show up. I had a very hard time trusting. I was very suspicious. I also made, again, a very bad choice in a partner and ended up with somebody who was abusive. And so after years, you know, I started realizing, okay, this experience has had an impact on me. It's not going to just go away. And as much as I wanted to just put it in the corner, forget about it, pretend that it wasn't there, I came to the place where I realized, you know, no, I have to look at this. I have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's quite courageous on that part, too, to even be able to go that deep within yourself to become aware of that and say, hey, I got to do something about this.
Right, yeah. And I think most of us who've been abused, we usually hit that place. And then what can be frustrating, certainly what was frustrating for me, was that despite going to therapists and reading books and joining groups, I was starting to get some understanding about why I was making some of the choices I was making and what I was doing. But every time I got to the place of wanting to know, okay, well, that's great, but what do I now do about it? How do I actually get out of this pattern? How do I actually change this behavior?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't getting any good answers. And I just kept going around the same mountain over and over and over again. And when I was about 28, that relationship ended. And I had this moment where I was looking at my life and thinking, God, I have just been surviving all these years.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been, it's been a constant struggle. It's always felt like a burden. I'm always feeling miserable, or I have a good day, but then I'm back in it. And something's got to give. There has to be a better way to deal with this problem. There has to be an answer to, you know, what do I do about it?
Well, you know, that's really interesting. I bet you there are so many people with that feeling right now.
Yeah.
Living
absolutely.
With that right now.
Absolutely. And I talked to people and I, you know, other people who I knew, they were struggling too. So it really kind of lit a fire under me, quite honestly. And I set out to try to figure out the answer to this. And so I started reading everything I could. I started studying neuroscience. I completed my master's in counseling psychology. And I also just started paying really close attention to what was working for me, what ideas, patterns, habits, choices, insights were I having that was making a difference. And so all of it eventually came together and is the program that I now offer for survivors of childhood sexual abuse.
Beautiful. Oh, my gosh. And so now what I've seen is you have a different segment, like different blogs that where you talk about the like eating disorders. And, that you know, it sounds to me like with not dealing with or coping with or grieving or what it is that we need to work through, certain symptoms occur, such as addictions or things like that. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah. And so, you know, what I often do as a kind of a free resource on my website is, you know, I link to my blog, and I'm constantly bringing on guest bloggers who are either telling their story and what they did to recover, or bringing on people who are talking about how abuse impacts other areas of life, such as sexuality or our relationship to food. And in fact, just started a series this past week on the relationship of trauma and disordered eating, and that will be continuing, you know, for the next 2 weeks. So the blog is a great place for people to go and certainly read about a variety of topics and dig all the way back in the archives. There's so much material there. I've been really blessed to have people come on as guest bloggers and share their stories and perspectives, and we'll continue doing that. We'll have a series coming up soon about bullying, actually, and how, you know, we become, you know, when there's abuse, how that sets us up in many ways to have a hard time standing up for ourselves and setting boundaries, and can be very vulnerable. to being attacked.
Oh, now, that's fabulous. Go ahead, Sarah.
Now, Rachel, I asked you a question, but obviously you guys didn't hear me because I was muted a while ago.
Sorry.
I was like, they ignored me, but I was, my microphone was muted. Now back to I was asking, what were some of the things that you did say that worked for you that you put into your program?
Oh, sure. Well, so what I very first began to understand through studying the brain and neuroscience is the impact that trauma has on the brain. And so one of the where we start in the program, from Broken to Beyond Surviving is an 8-month program, and I deliver it either by phone or by Skype, so have been able to work with people all over the country and even internationally. And where we start is the foundation, and that is understanding that the brain is wired a very particular way because of abuse. And all of the choices that we make in life, of course, are preceded by a thought, right? They're preceded by something going on in the brain. And so one of the things that made a big change for me was just simply getting that a lot of that was what was going on for me wasn't this insurmountable problem. It wasn't this airy, kind of effervescent, I can't get my hands wrapped around it to figure out what's happening thing. It was actually a very clear biological pattern. And my brain was actually doing what it was supposed to do in many ways. It was creating patterns and coping skills and to help me in order to deal with the experiences. So just by way of an example, whenever we have an experience, our tendency and the way that we are programmed is to try to interpret and understand why that's happening. And this is a good skill to have. We need to have this skill so that we can get on in the world.
Right.
The problem is that when it's something traumatic, our tendency is to always go towards something negative and also to make it about ourselves. So, for example, when I ran to my parents' room and I was there and I was all alone and I was crying and nobody was coming to check on me, in that moment, my explanation, my understanding of why that happened was like, oh, I must be on my own. Like, nobody's here for me. This is my problem.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And because of the way the brain works, I ignore the fact that, you know, my mom is, you know, 100 yards away in another part of the room, doesn't even hear me, or she's out, she's not even there, my dad's not even home. You know, these sorts of things, we forget that sort of stuff, and we go straight into that. So what happens is the brain, there's actually a neuronal connection that happens in the brain. And so as we continue in life, whenever we have experiences that are similar, that same pathway just lights up and causes us to feel and think the same things.
Right.
And so we start responding to situations over and over again out of these old habits, these old thoughts. And so just beginning to understand that, like just wrapping my head around that and going, oh, my gosh, like this is something that is, first of all, normal. It's what, you know, it actually was very helpful and useful to help me survive. But now I can actually do something about it. I can actually begin to intercept those thoughts and change them and move in a different direction. And as a result, then my choices, my behavior, my experiences also change.
Wow. That is a beautiful explanation about the brain and the pathway. Because we have the Daniel Amen Clinic out here, and so he speaks all over the place, and he talks about that, and he talks about the routine and the neurotransmitters that our brain works off of, patterns and routines. So if there is a traumatic event, our brain is going to continuously go to that traumatic event, no matter how minimal or major the trauma may be later, it's going to, because that's all it knows.
And that's
so
right.
It is.
That's right.
So it's up to us to change those patterns, but knowing how is the problem that people run into, because we're not given a toolbook. We're not given that just a manual of how to get through
right.
or how to change our thoughts, like you're saying.
And one of the downfalls of therapy when it comes to dealing with sexual abuse in lots of areas, therapy is extremely helpful to go back and talk about and revisit and re-experience. But when it comes to sexual abuse, it's a very negative thing to do because it reinforces those patterns and reinforces those stories. So, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot is kind of the three stages of recovery, and that when you're at the beginning stages in kind of the victim stage, you're somebody who hasn't really been able to talk about the abuse. You might not even really acknowledge or talk about yourself as somebody who's been abused, right? And, you know, when you're in that stage, it's all about beginning to just get comfortable with the fact that this is a part of what happened to you. And once you're there, you can then move into the next stage, which is what I call the survivor stage, which is where you do start talking about. Therapy is extremely helpful at this place because you get a chance to talk about what happened to you without having to challenge it, without having to do anything about it just yet. Just getting comfortable with being able to talk about it out loud, be okay, begin to draw some of those connections and understand it. But for me, what I noticed was I was getting stuck at that survivor stage, and a lot of people around me were getting stuck at that survivor stage. We're just constantly rehashing it and talking about it and dealing with it and not getting past it. So that's when I decided, there's a third stage. Say that again?
I was going to say that's just reinforcing those pathways.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And so that's where I kind of decided, all right, there must be a next stage, and I'm going to, you know, I kind of coined this phrase and trademarked this phrase, beyond surviving, to represent the kind of what's next, which is when the patterns and the pathways are weakened. They're never ever completely gone, but you can think of it like a pathway that if you stop treading it a lot, then, you know, like the grass grows back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the pathway is still there, and if you start walking that pathway again, it's going to come right back where it was. But you don't experience the triggers as often or as frequently, and more importantly, you have the skills and the tools for how to handle it when they do come up. And that, that's a huge part of the program, is just simply teaching communication skills, relationship skills, self-respect skills, all of those sorts of things, so that when situations come up in our lives, we know how to respond.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, that's beautiful. And so the coaching aspect of it, it is really very empowering, and it gives that person the ability to find within themselves that they can make those changes. Instead of, like you said, in the therapy where you're rehashing, maybe it's a more optimistic way of looking at your life. Because like you just said, it happened. You can't change the past, but you can change how you feel about the past.
That's right, yeah. And therapy plays an important part in every journey. But if you find yourself at that moment where you're like, okay, I'm sick of this. Like, essentially, you know, I'm working with those people who are just beyond sick and tired of feeling, you know, broken, burdened, unfixable, and are they ready to let go of the pain of abuse and finally feel normal? And, you know, want to experience, you know, their genuine selves. I often describe, you know, my journey was so much about, it wasn't, in some ways it was learning new things, but in other ways it was pulling away all the layers of junk that had been put on to me because of abuse, mm-hmm. and just letting my real self start to come out again and to show up.
Right, where you are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's,
you know, yeah.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's really amazing to me to watch the distinction between coaching and therapy, because, and one of the reasons why I chose coaching was because I wanted to be able to use my story in a way that you just can't when you're a licensed therapist. And I also wanted to work with people in a more collaborative way. I wanted it to be, you know, driven by, you know, what they're up to and what their needs are. And, you know, we use my guidebook as, you know, kind of a foundation and a resource. And but walking through this journey and then being able to come together and, you know, be on the phone, be on Skype with each other and talk about what's showing up for them and then be able to get under why that's happening in a very short amount of time. And then, most importantly, getting them into action. That was a huge piece for me when I was developing From Broken to Beyond Surviving. I knew I wanted it to be measurable. I wanted people to be able to come in and say, this is what I want, and walk out saying, this is what I got, and be happy with that. So, you know, that for people who maybe don't know the, you know, much about what coaching is like, you know, I just want to make that distinction a little bit. It's, you know, it's very future focused. It's about what's happening right now, but how we can shift that and change that and get you on to, you know, whatever's next for you in your life.
Can we go ahead and take a break right now and go to commercial? And we will be right back in just a few minutes to hear more about Rachel's story.
Thank you.
Soul Sister Radio.
Now a message from our sponsor, EducateEtiquette.com. Have you ever been at a table with a group of people and there is one person being rude on their cell phone? Have you mentioned it to that person and they still do it as if they just don't care as much for those around them in the flesh as they do for their own personal thread on Facebook? It's even worse when you're around our older generation who really have a hard time understanding how people can form relationships this way. There is wisdom in their thinking, so please don't be rude. Put it away in respect. Yourself, most of all. Thank you for joining us on Soul Sister Enterprise, and please visit us at www.educateetiquette.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Whoever believes in me will do the same works I have done, and even greater works. This wasn't lip service. Jesus was talking to you. Every Soul Sister Friday at 10 a.m., learn how to claim your God-given dominion to follow the Master's example and restore health, demonstrate supply, harmonize relationships, and have victory over sin with Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson, Spiritual Solutions to Life's Challenges.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Hello, and thank you. We are back. I want to let you guys know if anybody would like to call in, you don't have to give your name. It can be totally
anonymous.
Like that. Anonymous, yes. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. And our call-in number is 347-857-3760. And at the end, we'll give you contact information for Rachel if you'd like to get in contact with her. She has a free webinar coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Rachel? I saw it on your website. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So on September 5th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, I'm doing a 90 minute teleseminar called 3 Steps to Let Go of the Pain of Abuse and Finally Feel Normal. Okay. And to register for the call and get the call-in information, folks can go to rachelgrantcoaching.com/broken-to-beyond.
Okay, and they can say also that just one more time because I'm okay. Can you say that one more time because I'm typing it?
Yeah, it's Rachel, okay. R-A-C-H-E-L, Grant, G-R-A-N-T, coaching.com slash broken to beyond.
Okay, I got that. Yeah, because I saw it the other day and I wanted to share it, but I couldn't find the link to actually share it. I could find how to sign up for it.
Oh, yeah, that's it right there. And I appreciate that. Yeah, and it's going to be a good talk. I'm going to kind of go through a little bit more deeply into some of the neuroscience and how the brain works that we talked about, and then discuss 3 strategies or steps that survivors of childhood abuse can begin using right away to get into some of the better habits that I've been talking about, you know, challenging those false beliefs, setting up some new habits and patterns, and, you know, being able to finally, you know, break free from that pain and begin to feel like themselves again.
Yeah, because I think that's probably the biggest problem is breaking free from it after you do survive.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah, we don't want to stay stuck in it. And sometimes it can feel, I mean, I certainly remember feeling that way myself, like, was there going to be another side to this story? And I had a very hard time picturing what it was going to even look like because I had spent, you know, 18 years of my life feeling not great, feeling like I didn't deserve to be loved, feeling that I was not very valuable, being very, very afraid to connect with other people. And, you know, for me, I think one of the things that I cherish the most about this work is, you know, I'm not a perfect person. I still have my days. But one of the things that I get to do is to model and to let people know that it's possible, that you can reach this place where you're not feeling hurt all of the time and you do know how to cope and how to handle your life, you know, and all the lessons that we sometimes miss as a result of being abused that, you know, we can learn them later. I remember when I was 28, I had this moment where I thought, oh my gosh, I am about emotionally mature as a 12-year-old. I'm great in all these other areas, you know, I can handle work and I do great at school, but when it comes to emotions, I'm still a baby. But I learned, you know, and we can all learn. Whatever area in our lives where we're feeling, you know, kind of stuck or broken or confused, you know, it's definitely possible for us to get the skills that we need and to move on and have a better life.
That brings up a great question. Do you think, like, for a teenager that's gotten out of it, that they maybe revert back to, like, you know, 7? If they were like 15, yeah, because I know a girl who was, and she, has reverted back to acting like a 7-year-old and being all goofy, giddy, and so that's probably a normal thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and in some ways, you know, when I'm in my 30s, I sometimes act like I'm in my 20s. You know, we do this, regardless of whether abuse is there or not. We sometimes revert back to old patterns because they feel more comfortable. They're what we're used to. You know, one of the things that I experienced, and I certainly hear a lot of my clients talk about, is the strange fear that there is of, well, if I take away all of this stuff, if I actually do cut out these patterns and I don't have this drama or I don't have this chaos or I'm not, you know, constantly feeling upset or sad, like, what's that actually going to look like? And sometimes that can be scarier than what you're dealing with right now. You know?
Yes.
And so, can you relate to that?
Yes, absolutely, because I was fighting for my daughter who was being sexually abused, and
And when it was getting close to an end point, everyone was like, what will you look like after this is done? And because I spent 12 years fighting, and I'm like, I don't know. And I was kind of lost. Like, I was missing something afterwards. Something was gone. And at first it wasn't a happy gone, like I should be all happy and excited because she's finally safe. But it was like, okay, something's missing. Like when a loved one goes away kind of thing.
Yeah, I hear that. There's this experience of, you know, almost a blank slate, or sometimes I think of it as, you know, we have this blank canvas in front of us, and sometimes a blank canvas can feel intimidating, right? And we can harbor all sorts of fears that we're going to make the same mistakes again, or go down the same path. But on the other hand, if we can reframe it a little bit, and if we can set it up as a bit more about being curious or an adventure or trying on a choice today and seeing how that feels, and if it doesn't feel good, you can actually choose differently the next day so that it's do you remember like the Etch-a-Sketches where you could draw and then you just shook it and it was like a brand new page, you know? So often we fall into the trap of thinking that life is, it's this permanent set in stone thing, that if I choose this, this is the way it's going to be and it's going to have to be that way. So we avoid choosing, we avoid changing, we avoid trying things on that sometimes don't feel exactly right or comfortable, especially because they're new. But when we start to allow ourselves to embrace life as more like the Etch-a-Sketch model, where I can actually draw something today and I can see what it looks like, I can see how I feel being that, and if I like it, I can keep it, and if I don't, I can just shake it up and try something else the next time.
Right.
I like that.
And sometimes maybe the encouragement to let you know that it's okay to do that.
Yeah.
Now, what advice would you give to somebody who's out there listening now that's in that stage? What would you tell them besides that, to how to deal with that?
In which state? In the scared to move forward? I know I need to change, but I'm not sure if I can.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, often the biggest and scariest step is just the asking for support step. And finding the right type of support for you, whether it's working with a coach like me or some other professional or attending a group, you know, taking one little step forward each day is how you're going to get to the end of your journey. And understanding that you don't have to do it all in one day. You don't have to say, I'm going to fix everything. You don't even have to say, I'm going to give up everything that's not working. You can hold on to some of that stuff for a while you focus on one other little thing. So I guess what I'm saying is sometimes recovery feels like this, well, my relationships are terrible and, you know, I keep fighting with my boyfriend or girlfriend and I'm not doing very, very well with money because I can't go to work because I'm sad or I'm having PTSD or I'm having panic attacks and my kids are driving me crazy. You know, it starts to feel like this big, huge, everything is wrong thing. And so it can paralyze us. And we can start to feel like I can't handle anything and I don't know what to do, so I'm just not going to do anything, right? So I would really encourage people to just take a look at, you know, one small area, one small place in their life where they can take on, you know, changing and transforming it. You know, when I do the program with my clients, I spent a lot of time thinking about the sequence of when we would deal with what problem. Most of the time, a lot of times clients come to me because they are having troubles in a relationship. You know, the abuse is impairing their ability to trust. They're so afraid of being abandoned, certainly something I can relate to and have felt, that's the thing that they come in the door with. But what we actually have to do is lay some foundational work and get some other things in place so that when we then take a look at your relationships, you're in a good place to do that, right? So, you know, sometimes the point of that is don't even try to fix the problem that you think is the problem necessarily. Take a step back and look at, you know, how are you thinking about yourself? How are you thinking about your situation? You know, what's going on in your thought life? The mind is so extremely powerful. And, you know, I have to be careful because I'm not talking about things like, you know, just be positive and everything will be okay. You know, that kind of thinking can actually lead to more damage. But by being able to detach and separate yourself from the thoughts that you're having and from what's actually really going on is a very powerful first step that you can take when you can begin to recognize that those thoughts that are stirring everything up for you are just thoughts. They're not a truth. They don't have any substance. They don't have any power. They're just there.
Interesting.
Wow.
Well, they would have power if you allow them to, but understanding
yeah.
that you can't allow them.
Or yeah, do you guys want to do a quick exercise that I do with my clients just to illustrate the
sure.
point?
Sure.
Yeah,
okay,
and everybody
wonderful.
Everybody listening can play along too. So what I want you to do is to think a thought that you've been having about something that, you know, causes you a bit of fear, causes you a bit of worry. And I want you to just kind of let that thought come up. And then I want you to start thinking about how you just, you know, it's an I can't statement, okay? Like, I can't get better. I can't change my relationship. I can't, you know, make money. I can't get this job, okay? Those thoughts feel really, really true, right? Like, that's really the truth. That's really what the circumstance is. So now what I want you to think instead is I want you to start thinking, I can't raise my hand. I can't, there's no way. There's no way that I can lift up my hand and wave. If I lift up my hand and wave, bad things are going to happen. I might not be okay. It's very unsafe to do that. It's a problem. Are you starting to have those thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So keep thinking, there's no way at all that I can possibly wave my hand and wave. And I want you to pretend I'm sitting across from you, and I want you to lift up your hand and start waving while you're still thinking, there's no way that I can wave. Are you waving at me?
Well, it feels a little hesitant.
Say that again?
I feel it makes me feel hesitant to lift my
uh-huh.
hand.
Okay, so you're hesitating, but can you go ahead and raise your hand for me and go ahead and
uh-huh.
wave at me across the table? So you're doing
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, got it. So there was some fear, there was some worry, but you actually, your thought actually could not stop your hand from raising.
That's right.
So the only time that thoughts have power over us is when we latch onto them as something that's really, really true about us. But as we just saw, thoughts are just, all that's happening is the brain is just kicking off neuronal pathways. That's all that's going on. It's just energy. It's not a truth. It doesn't have to be there. And you can act and you can make choices independent of your thoughts. So you can be really, really scared to go to that party and ask that girl out. Or you can be really, really scared to be intimate with your husband. But you can start to make some choices and let the thought just be there, let it fade into the background, challenge it, and go ahead and make some choices. And when you actually get out there and you start asking the girl out and you get positive responses, or you have an intimate moment with your husband and you enjoy it, then those behaviors start teaching you new things about what's really true and what can really be possible in your life.
Actually creating new neural pathways.
That's right.
And then you create more of those pathways, and the easier those thoughts become.
That's right. You got it. That's right. The only reason why the thoughts, I can't, I'm not, I'm terrible, are so quick and we're so quick to go to them is, one, the brain is just wired that way. The brain is, it goes to the negative first because it's a survival technique.
That's
but
right.
It also goes there just because that's what you've been practicing. Anything that you practice, you're going to get good at.
That's
and
right.
So if you practice all of these negative things about who you are and what your options are and how things are going to go, how things are going to turn out, you're going to be very, very good at that. But similarly, if you begin practicing other techniques, other skills, you shift your focus to other things, you get strong in other ways and you become skilled at that instead.
Do you find affirmations helpful? I'm a post-it person.
Yeah, you know, affirmations are so interesting. They're getting a lot of flack in pop psychology and in the world of psychology these days. And I actually
uh-huh.
use what I call declarations.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the important distinction. Saying an affirmation like, I am beautiful,
mm-hmm.
it is a temporary fix. It can make you feel warm and fuzzy. It can help shift your focus momentarily. But the brain is going to go back to wherever it goes back to whenever there's stress or difficulty or you're low on energy or you haven't eaten enough. So the reason why I use the word declaration is because it's about declaring and claiming something for yourself as opposed to kind of a wishful thinking. And when we declare and claim something for ourselves, we have to back it up with choices and behavior. And more importantly, it's not just about warm, fuzzy feelings. It's about literally changing the way the brain is wired, right? So when we start with language, which is extremely powerful, it's like just like I was saying, whenever you do practice with anything, you get better. But where you need, you know, sometimes if you start, you know, with any practice, you start with a warm-up, right? You have to stretch
right.
your legs, you have to stretch your body. Declarations
That's right.
are like a warm-up. They're not the end-all, be-all, but they're an entry point. They're like a first step, a way to get the brain going in the right direction. And then there
uh-huh.
are some deeper skills and some more, you know, a deeper level and more complicated skills that you then learn that basically back up the declarations and keep you moving.
Well, this is wonderful. What a feeling of inspiration for so many people to know that there's this kind of support out there. And Rachel, what you're doing, coming from your own personal experience and journey through this, it just goes to show that it's true that we can, I don't know about overcoming, but we can work through and learn how to improve our own lives just by learning these skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, it's an absolute honor, you know, to work with my clients. And, you know, I recently had a client who when we started, he was so frustrated with relationships. He had recently divorced and was just of the mind that, you know, relationships were just never going to work out for him. There was just no way it was going to happen. And he just, you know, couldn't trust. He was way too afraid of being abandoned. And, you know, now a year or so later, he's been in a year relationship and he's moving in with her. And they're doing great. And I just love seeing those sorts of transformations in my clients, you know, them getting themselves and their lives back and are no longer, you know, burdened and stuck because of the abuse.
Wow.
Now, you also send out emails, right?
I have a monthly newsletter, so folks can go to the website, rachelgrantcoaching.com, and on the left side, they can do a couple. There's so much you can do on my website, but they can sign up to receive the newsletter on a monthly basis, so they'll be sure to know about any of my upcoming events, like the talk that's going to be happening in September, or other radio shows that I'm going to be appearing on, special offers that I have every once in a while. They can also download an excerpt of the guidebook from the website and get parts 1 and 2 of the guidebook for free.
Wow.
As well as
I opened
other...
it up and I was looking at,
okay.
at your guidebook. And
mm-hmm.
I was noticing that you actually, it's, I almost want to say like a workbook.
Absolutely.
That somebody fills, there's some spaces that I didn't get a chance to read, but you ask something and then left spaces for the person to fill out.
Yeah, I wrote the guidebook with the intention that people could work it on their own if they weren't able to work with me one-on-one. And so, I certainly invite any of the listeners, if you pick up the guidebook and you decide to work it on your own, but if you get to a section and you don't understand something or you have a question, please don't hesitate. You know, give me a call, shoot me an email. I'm happy to, answer those sorts of questions because I want, people to be able to progress through it and not get stuck for some reason. So,
And they can. Where can they purchase the actual guidebook? You said this is an excerpt.
At the end of the excerpt, there will be a link, but you can also go to Amazon, and if you type in Beyond Surviving and my name, then the book will pop up, and you can buy the paperback or the Kindle version are available.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
That was quite an adventure putting the book together. that was a lot of work, but it was so rewarding. And quite honestly, like, this really is the program I use. Like, when I'm having a day or I'm having a moment, I really do. Like, I go pick up my book and I go and I read something or do a reflection from it and, get myself back on track if I'm having a rough day.
Well, clearly you've put a lot of work into this. And I'm looking at the different parts that you have at the bottom where it does say buy now and want to go further with your journey of recovery. The asking for support and defining the abuse and outcomes, identifying and challenging false beliefs, emotions, sharing your story, relationships, moving on. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I really wanted to put something out there that was easy, accessible, doable. It's not 500 pages. It's really something I think that can be approached easily.
Right. Now, we have about 2 minutes left, and we have a question from the chat room. Someone wants to know, how do you get past not ever feeling loved?
Yeah, that's in 2 minutes, huh? Okay, we're going to, let's see. Well, okay, first of all, never feeling loved, right? So the reason why we don't express or experience love is because we have ideas or thoughts about our worth and our value. So what we first want to investigate is what it is about us that we believe makes us unlovable. So if we were working together, one of the things I would ask you to do is a reflection on I don't deserve to be loved because, or I am unlovable because. We want to first begin identifying what's going on underneath that thought and begin thinking about where those beliefs even came from. How did you even get the idea that you were maybe say worthless or not deserving or sometimes in the more extreme dirty or less than, you don't matter, those sorts of things. And, one of the big false beliefs that often comes about as a result of abuse is, there must be something wrong with me and that's why this happened to me. And oftentimes those thoughts, what we end up thinking about ourselves and must have been true about us that caused us to be abused are what also cause us to think that nobody could possibly love us. And so whenever somebody starts to approach us with love, it's almost like we just can't tolerate it. We can't stomach it. We don't have the open space for it. So I'd love for you, first of all, thank you for your question. I'd love for you to do that reflection question and email me your answer. You can email me at coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com, and we can have a quick dialogue about it, and we can start taking a look at what's going on there, because it's by clearing away those thoughts that you can actually then create enough room and space in your life where you can feel loved.
That's excellent. So, you know who you are. You need to listen to that, okay? And you are lovable.
Well, I think that we all have issues with that. whether we're willing to admit it or not. So I just want to say thank you for your courage for even asking that question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay,
well,
and
Rachel? Oh, go ahead, sir.
I want to thank Rachel for coming on. Her show was amazing. There were a lot of people asking for information. So you'll be getting some contact with a few people. I posted your contact information, email, website, and stuff in the chat room. I want to thank everyone for listening, and most of all, Rachel, for being here.
Thank you, Rachel.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
It really has. It's been an honor, and thank you so much, and we will be in touch. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on Soul Sister Radio. Safety First is Murphy's Law. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you. Good night.
Soul Sister Radio.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.
Soul Sister Radio.